acknowledge some of those contributions. Firstly, the industry, and we've heard a bit about that today, but the TCF's made an invaluable contribution to the various standard terms of terminations processes. I publicly acknowledge that on a number of occasions and do so again today. Quite frankly, the setting of non-price terms for these complex services would have been incredibly difficult without that industry participation. Secondly, I think we have to recognise the contribution that Telecom has made in this entire process. Telecom's borne the brunt of preparing most of the standard terms proposals during a period in which it was facing tremendous amount of change, and at the same time as it was working on the operational separation undertakings. And I don't think anybody who didn't see the pressure that Telecom was under during that period would understand just how hard it is and how hard they all worked. And lastly, the telecommunications team at the Commission and my fellow commissioners Anita Mazzolini and Donald Curtin, both of whom are here today. It's been a team effort, and through that effort, I'm very grateful. I think we've achieved great things. Looking back now, I think we can say that the 2006 amendments to the Telecommunications Act have fundamentally changed the role of the Commission, the manner in which we engage with the industry, the manner in which we engage with other stakeholders in the wider community. Under the 2001 regime, the Commission was, when you boil it down, essentially an arbitrator of inter-carrier disputes. That dispute resolution role of necessity required a certain degree of detachment. Moreover, when matters came to the Commission, that was after a dispute had arisen, meaning that the process was inevitably adversarial, polarized entrenched positions on either side, and the Commission conferences were, I'm told, very serious and some would say grim affairs. But under the new regime, the Commission sets non-price and where appropriate price terms for regulated services on an industry-wide basis. Instead of dealing with inter-carrier disputes, the Commission is engaged with industry, often through the TCF process, to reach where possible consensus on technical and operational matters. Because the process involves the entire industry, the nature of the conferences is very different from the previous regime. They are more akin to industry workshops than dispute resolution forums, and certainly I've endeavoured to run them in this way. The Commission has appreciated the way that the participants have dealt with matters, particularly at the conference, and sought to reach consensus really with a view to reaching an outcome that would benefit the entire industry. We have had our lighter moments, and I'm sure that Chris Drybridge from Chorus, Immortal Words, I've Lost the Will to Live, will someday be enshrined in the history of New Zealand's telecommunications. The other thing that has changed fundamentally is the nature of the draft determination. When dealing with intercarrier disputes, the issues are very clearly established and have been fought about for a considerable period of time. And in that context, the draft determination is likely to be very close to the final decision. But under the new regime, that's not the case. I was asked at an interview after we released our draft, Unbundled Local Loop Determination, whether there would be any changes in the final determination. It was just before the World Cup, and my answer was that it was like asking at half-time in a game of rugby whether the score would be different at full-time. It all depends on what happens in the second half. And our experience is that the quality of information that's received in the second half of our process, and that's in submissions and cross-submissions after the draft determination, and more particularly the conference itself, is of much higher quality and far more focused than the information that we receive in the first half. As a consequence, the final determination is informed by far better information than was available to the Commission at an earlier stage. Now the approach that we have taken when faced with imperfect information and with the statutory requirement to have a draft determination that has all the price and non-price terms is basically to come to a preliminary view on the basis that if parties don't agree with what we say they won't be slow in letting us know. And we weren't wrong. My favourite submission, I won't say who the party is, but the author may recognise it. Following one of our draft reports went like this. The Commission is going too far in this draft report. What the Commission is saying seems highly unreasonable. Next paragraph. But it gets worse. Next paragraph. Even more concerning. Next paragraph. Perhaps worst of all. Conclusion. All in all, we think this regulatory proposal is a recipe for disaster. The Commission can do much better than its current draft report in its analysis of the issues. Now, part of the emotion that you can feel in that submission, I think, was a mindset that the draft is pretty much set in concrete and we've really got to make a fuss about this to make the Commission see what idiots they are. When, in fact, the draft is there as a preliminary view to seek views and really the industry, and I think after the experience with the Coftus we've had, should be in no doubt that we're completely open-minded to change our view on any issue. With the better information and quality of submissions that we receive in the second half. In the UBA backward determination, we actually took that process a step further, and that when we sent out the conference agenda, we sent out a memorandum which explained where, having read submissions and cross-submissions, our views had changed from what had been in the draft determination. This was designed to ensure that all the parties knew that if we had changed our thinking, what we were now thinking at an early conference parties came prepared to argue at length a proposition that really the Commission had already accepted. So, and where our thinking had changed, parties would know exactly where to target these submissions. Feedback has been said that participants found that helpful and we will continue to do that in the future. Now just to touch on our current work, we're preparing for a June release of the final backhaul standard terms determination for UCLL and UBA. We've just received the mobile co-location standard terms proposal. We expect to receive the sublet unbundling standard terms proposal in June. We're on schedule to release the final 0405 and 0506 TSA determinations at the end of June, with revised draft determinations coming out very shortly. We'll soon be releasing a draft discussion document on accounting separation framework for telecom, and at the same time overseeing the implementation of the operational separation undertakings. In the Commission's 2007 market monitoring report, we noted that with the imminent entry of a third mobile operator into the New Zealand market, we will be paying close attention to mobile termination rates for voice and SMS. We commented on the emergence of calling plans which provide substantial price reductions for calls within the network compared with the costs of calls between networks, and observed that if mobile termination rates were set significantly above cost, this would reduce the ability of a new entrant to compete effectively in the market. Just 2 weeks ago, Germany's Federal Cartel Office announced that it was investigating two mobile operators for abuse of dominance in the German mobile telecommunications market. The Cartel Office is looking at whether different on-net and off-net tariffs by dominant market leaders could be an infringement of competition law. Their concern is that in this case, the two market leaders were offering extremely low prices for calls between their customers on their own networks, which, combined with their market shares, threaten smaller operators' ability to compete. The Commission is considering commencing a Schedule 3 investigation into whether or not mobile-to-mobile termination rates for voice and SMS should be subject to regulation. And as a first step in their progress, I've today written to industry representatives asking them for their views on this issue. The Commission's also instigating a study into telecommunication numbering administration. Currently, number administration is self-regulated under a number administration deed entered into by various parties in May 2000. The parties to the deed and the TCF are currently reviewing the structure and considering the possibility of transferring responsibility for numbering to the TCF. The Commission, for its part, intends to carry out a study of international best practice for numbering and compare that best practice with the current NAD structure. In March, we commenced a Section 9A study of next generation networks. This study is the first under the Commission's new sector monitoring power, which enable us to investigate any matter relating to telecommunications markets in a strategic manner with no particular bias for or against regulation. The response to the study from industry has been very positive, and submissions have assisted us to develop our terms of reference. We are conscious of the considerable workload on the industry in general and smaller players in particular, and we aim to be flexible in our approach. The revised terms of reference for this study will be available by the end of this week. We anticipate separate work streams on technical, commercial and regulatory issues with a workshop approach and a commission-sponsored conference with international speakers in the final quarter of this year. Several submissions we received commented on the desire for stakeholder engagement to be wider than just the members of the Telecommunications Carriers Forum. While we are engaging with the TCF about technical and timing issues and coordination of their own activities, our intention is to ensure the study provides a broad strategic overview and therefore consultation with the wider industry is essential. It was very clear from the submissions that there was a desire to look at VoIP as a matter of urgent priority, that the study should not focus solely on issues arising from telecoms cabinetization plans, and should be technology neutral. For the study, we will be adopting the current ITU definition of next generation network, that is a packet-based network able to provide telecommunications services to users and able to make use of multiple broadband quality of service enabled transport technologies. So completely technology neutral. The study will be looking at both core and access network issues. Will include consideration of the potential for different fixed and wireless technologies, how they're being adopted overseas, and where we may be able to build on that experience in New Zealand. It's interesting to note, and we've heard the debate about the role of fibre to the home, fibre to the cabinet, suggestion from our first speaker that copper is obsolete and we should forget about it altogether. It's interesting to note that in Europe, fibre to the cabinet and VDSL over the copper subloop is the dominant broadband technology. The Netherlands, for instance, describes itself as the broadband capital of Europe based on its penetration and usage figures. We've heard a lot about the Amsterdam project for fibre to the home. In the Netherlands, the incumbent KPN has embarked on a 4-year all-IP network transition to deliver 30 to 100 megs to suburban residents. That plan involves rolling out street cabinets to every street and using VDSL2 technology. In Germany, Deutsche Telekom is engaged in a 2-year next generation access network rollout. What's it doing? Deploying street cabinets and using VDSL. And the German regulator stated that VDS will be an important access scenario in Germany in the next few years. So the impression that everyone's rolling out fibre to the home and that's what we should be doing is actually not a fair indication of what's happening. Fibre to the home is being deployed without doubt, generally in heavily populated cities with multi-unit dwellings. What is significant is that outside of new subdivisions, it's being deployed not by the incumbent, but by alternative networks, often in partnership with local authorities. And the reason for this is, on reflection, self-evident. The incumbent already has a ubiquitous copper network and can use vastly cheaper fibre to the cabinet and VDSL or ADSL 2+ to deliver significant bandwidth to residential customers. To invest significant further funds to cannibalise their existing network makes no economic sense. Conversely, it makes a lot of sense for a new entrant to make the investment to bypass the incumbent's existing network. Also often overlooked in this debate is that wireless broadband is developing at a incredible, right? With speeds in excess of 100 megs already achieved under laboratory conditions. Now, Russell covered in his presentation this morning the fact that there's 1.3 billion PCs in the world. When I wrote this yesterday, I said there were 3.3 billion mobile phones. But Russell tells us this morning there's 3.5 billion, so that's been tremendous uplift in the last 24 hours. And the numbers are expected to reach 5 billion by 2012. Research that was done by BT identified mobility as the single most important consumer driver, more important than anything else. They wanted the ability to get fast broadband wherever they were. And so it's absolutely clear that wireless broadband has an incredibly important role to play as one of the number of technologies that will be able to deliver high-speed broadband services to users. And when you're looking at this entire debate of where this is all going, the reality is that all technologies have a role to play and will vary according to location, demographics, cost-benefit analysis, consumer preference. The broadband solution will not be a national one-size-fits-all solution. Each community has its own unique set of factors to take into account, and we've heard a bit about Northland and Tasman and others. And that's where competition comes in. The best solutions are arrived at where a number of telecommunication service providers can offer variety of technology, services and prices, pitching their offers to satisfy the requirements of their customers. It's the promotion of competition which will best deliver the right services at the right price for the long-term benefit of end users. Thank you.